people and places. With your hosts, Brad Banjo, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey, this is episode 428 of the best podcast in the world for automotive scene and the best podcasters. That's right. You tuned in to Shift and Steer, pal. And we're going to start today's podcast off with something that's going to really just piss off Aaron's dad, Sammy Hagar.
That's always a smart thing to do, Brad.
Driving into work today. And the top of the news was this headline. The government came out with an official statement today, reading that there is none whatsoever. There is no evidence of extraterrestrials. UFOs have visited our planet. So I'm just saying, I'm just going to leave it right there.
But well, that can't be true because I just saw your dad. I just saw Sammy said on Instagram that aliens are real, and he believes in aliens. So I'm going with that.
He's not the only one, man. I mean, Billy Gibbons is really into that whole thing. I believe a lot of it. You've got to say,
listen,
there's billions of stars out there. How can there only be us?
It's just more misinformation. You know,
yeah. Well, it's got to make you wonder if they say there isn't. Why do they go to so much to say there isn't, Aaron? That means there probably is.
Exactly. I mean, you don't hear the church saying there is no God.
That's a good point, right? Like, go all in.
Don't get me started.
Go all in.
Think about it. Think about it, boys. What if we never left our podcast studio? Okay. Right. And we said, yeah, there can't be any more. Or let's just say we never left our city, you know. But there can't be any other cities out there. There's nobody else out there. I mean, we've never seen them. We've never seen them. There's, there's a lot more cities out there. What were you going to say, Matt? We tracked all over you.
I was just going to say these are the kind of things that worry me. Like when Aaron goes overlanding and he travels to the edge of the world, I'm afraid he's just going to fall off the edge because it's flat and I don't know where else.
You know what, Matt? I almost did, but there was one tree on the property and we tied ourselves to it just in case.
Just in case. There you go. Anyway, what are we talking about? Slow. Let's go.
Oh my God.
Let's talk about cars. Slow.
You brought up overlanding and it brought up something. This wasn't even on the show agenda today, but I got to bring it up and I don't know if you guys saw it. Did you see by chance the guy who posted the video? He had a Bronco and he almost killed himself. It was caught on a snowdrift. Did you see this? Okay.
No.
So this guy puts up a video, and unfortunately, I don't have a link to it or anything. His Bronco, fully tricked out. He had the big bumper on the front with a winch, had all the tow hooks, had everything. This thing was, you know, really nice and was raised up, had big tires under it. He got it caught on a snowdrift. So a guy with a Jeep comes along and Jeep equally tricked out. And I don't know if they were friends or if he just came along, but this guy has a winch. There's trees around. Do they winch him off this snowdrift? Oh, no. They take one of those nylon tow ropes and they put it and they took time to have a drone up in the air. This dude in the Jeep doesn't just ease into the rope. He like nails it, gets to the end. The tow rope doesn't break. It comes off the hook, goes wing like a rubber band back at the Bronco through the windshield. And luckily it didn't hit the guy square in the head, but unfortunately nicked him across the neck and nicked his artery. The guy's bloody and bleeding, and they had to rush him to the hospital. Luckily, it was. I mean, they showed a picture of this tow hook through the windshield. Picture of him, blood all over the place. It was on YouTube. I'm sure you can search it. But guys, if you have a winch, that's what it's for. It's to get you off of those things. Secondarily, if you're using any kind of a tow rope, make sure, number one, it's up to capacity. Number two, you ease into it and you have it hooked on the other vehicle correctly, because
Brad, occur. I'm actually going to stop you. There's something called a kinetic rope, and it actually is like a giant bungee rope.
Yes.
And you do, you actually get a little bit of a launch with those, and you use that kinetic energy on as it recompresses to yank the other vehicle out. I'm guessing that's what he attempted to do. He just had a little more gumption than he probably.
All right. Well, I'm not familiar with that. So yeah, you're the off-road
that's,
guy.
That's what I'm telling you. So
but it's what I'm going to say is make sure it's hooked on correctly.
Yes. So that's the thing is instead of just like a static pull from a winch, you know, just like a dead pull from a winch. Now I'm not a recovery expert, so excuse me if I'm getting this a little off.
Are you a recovering expert?
But I've been thankful enough not to have to do it too much, but I should be in better practice. So with the kinetic ropes, Warren actually gave me one, or Factor 55 gave me one to use, and I haven't used it yet. But there is a strategy in it, which does you want to load up the energy by kind of abruptly pulling, and then as it stretches, it'll add more force to bring it out. It uses that kinetic energy. It's interesting. I can't say I'm a big fan of it. I, like yourself, would rather just winch someone out properly and have more control with my speed. This is just kind of a quick recovery thing. I don't know the circumstances of this. It wouldn't be my A choice, but I see more and more of these kinetic ropes being used. And I always question them because I'm like, man, do you really want to yank someone out like that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I've got an idea. You bring that rope down. We will get Matt's Lightning. We'll hook it to the front of his Mustang and we'll see how it works. What do you think, Matt? Come on.
I'll try it. As long as I can hide under the dash and wear a helmet while I'm doing it. I don't need anything flying through my windshield.
We have to get your car stuck. So that's the first thing.
Well, I feel like that's going to probably be pretty easy to do.
Recovery stuff is so tricky, you guys. And I would caution anybody, if you don't know what you're doing or you don't double check your equipment, don't just take a chance. I had to go up to Tahoe just for a couple hours to clear all that snow we got up there. I had to reestablish the pathways and stuff because no one would know what to do. And on my way down, I saw a red Jeep that was just destroyed. The only reason I knew it was a Jeep is because I saw the grill. But this thing, it just looked like it had gone end over end over end until it just almost disintegrated. And I don't know if it was survived. I don't know anything about it. But you just got to be careful with all this stuff. Just because you drive a Jeep or a Bronco and it's got all the bells and whistles, it doesn't mean it's better. It doesn't mean it's safer. It doesn't mean you're better or safer. Just take care of any of this stuff, because, you know, you almost took the guy's head off. This stuff happens and it's freakish. And it could happen to the best.
If we started going through the stories that we've shared, I mean, you know, towing cars, motorcycles. I mean, one of the things I see people do all the time with ratchet tie downs is over tighten them. I mean, I saw a guy one time, he had it to the frame of the car and just kept tightening it till the hook in his trailer pulled out of the floor. I'm like, dude, I think it's a little too tight, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's so many things. Just like any tool, know your tools, know its limits. And you know, that there's limits on there for a reason.
Hey, so I'm sorry. I went off half cocked there, 'cause it just, when you mentioned off-road, that popped in my head. I see.
No, it was good. Look up a kinetic rope. It's actually really interesting how they work. You basically pull on them and they stretch. And then as the car comes out, it has all this kinetic energy, which helps pull it out further. But I don't think you're supposed to get a running start.
Oh, this guy was like a I mean, like a launch, man.
Yeah, a lot of people get a big running start and try to build up more energy. And boy, yeah. you want a freight train coming at you on a bungee rope?
Energy coming back at you. Hey, Matt, did you see the debut of the Rivian, the R2?
I did, and I was talking to Alistair from Edmonds a little bit about it as well. It's
okay. It's very first thing before you get into it.
Yeah.
First impression of the R3 or the R3X, because I saw it and it came to me immediately. This thing, and what do you guys think?
I'm looking it up. I'm looking it up now. I saw some posts on it, but I actually didn't look into it.
Okay, well, while you're looking it up, I'm going to say what I thought. I liked it, don't get me wrong, but it immediately made me think of something that I like, actually. Something I always wanted.
A Yugo?
Renault Turbo R5. I mean, it's got the R, it's got the number, but remember those wide body Renault turbos in the 80s? Oh,
those were the coolest, but I think this looks more like a Yugo.
They still are the coolest. But that's what I looked at that and I went, oh man, that looks like a Renault turbo.
Is it really that small? Oh, it is, isn't it? A little tiny.
It's their new little one.
Oh, okay. I see. I'm looking at a 3/4 view. Yes. From a side profile, it is a little Renault 5 turbo.
Yes.
From the 3/4 that I see here, it looks very Yugo.
The Golf EV is what came up as well. The current, the Volvo CX30 EV that's out. That's also what people are kind of talking about. But look, it's a cool piece, but this is kind of an interesting move by Rivian, because
I know
Rivian, you know, like we talked last week about how the EV companies, a lot of the EV companies, put out their annual reports and they're missing the mark of sales and stock prices dropped. And so then Rivian comes out with this big press announcement to get people excited and get Wall Street excited about the new vehicles that are being lined up, and it was a smart move.
It worked. Their stock went up.
Yes, but these are vehicles not slated until 2026. So now how do you keep everybody excited for roughly 2 years? You know, and the way the current lineup is of their truck and their SUV, it makes sense for those to get a refresh announcement in about a year. And to come out, you know, a year after these other cars do, or the same year these cars do. So it's going to be tough to kind of keep people excited about that. And we're kind of getting, I think these car companies are getting a little ahead of their skis on these announcements, right? Like if you think back to a few years ago,
Elon Musk set the bar.
Not necessarily just Elon Musk, because a few years ago, the previous like CEO of Lotus said, here's the future of Lotus. And he debuted like 5 different things. We've got the sedan and we've got an SUV. We've got these sports cars. And then none of it happened. Management shifted. They're like, we're not paying for this. Like none of that happened. And people were like, yeah, now it's just kind of vaporware. And then, you know, Fisker just did their announcement a little while ago, which they probably should have did after the stock price instead of before the stock price dropped. Because they're like, we're going to do a pickup truck and we're going to do an SUV and we're going to have a supercar. And I'm like, okay, but as a shareholder, I'm not. But if I was, I would look at that and go, I love that you're doing all these new projects. But can we focus on sales for now? And then we could talk about, you know, the 5 other things you're going to debut later.
I'll give you a great analogy. And for those of that are aware of the entertainment industry, the workings of it, it is getting to be like the entertainment industry in the fact that we're going to come out with this and this and this, and they talk about a lot of it. Some of it never materializes. And if there is a shift in leadership, a new president, a new CEO comes in, all those old projects get shelved and new ones come in. And it's just, but what I meant about Elon Musk is that he just throws stuff out there, and then you wait and see if it ever even happens. You know, it's one of those things where you just kind of go, man. And you know what? This is business, Brad, here. I've got a problem with this going clear back decades to where we changed America business. No, wait a minute. Worldwide business, where everything is derived by the stock price rather than the business driving the stock price. The stock price drives the business, meaning it's all driven on what are our revenues? What are the shareholder value? We want shareholder value. We want all of that. But the company has to come first, and that's what was forgotten. And, you know, we're not business here. It's just my thought.
I saw one of those little oceans on the road the other day. It's a good-looking little SUV in person.
It is nice. Yeah. I like the Ocean. It's got some nice features. It was just kind of released a little
driven
early.
You haven't driven a Rivian, have you?
I haven't driven the Rivian yet.
I like them. I see them all the time in my neighborhood. I love them.
Yeah. There's a lot of them here.
Fisker just released a little early and the software needs to catch up. Rivian was kind of in the same boat. They have pretty decent build quality. And there's been several over the updates that made some pretty significant improvements. I would say the same thing about Lucid, but Lucid also has some build quality issues. So they've got a little bit more work to do. I think Rivian is onto something pretty neat. The guys at Edmunds, they own a Rivian. They also own a Lightning, so they were able to do a test. And they ordered the Cybertruck, but they rented one on like Turo from somebody and did a comparison. So they just put out their video of the Rivian versus F-150 versus Cybertruck, but they didn't put the Cybertruck on the test track because it was a rented truck. So the performance tests will come later, but they did sort of look at the functionality of a truck, the Rivian versus the F-150 versus the Cybertruck. And surprisingly, Cybertruck did well and is a little bit more of a truck than we anticipated. It still lacks quite a few features. Like it's pretty high up and the bed is difficult to, you know, the angle of the side, it's tough to put stuff in the side, in the bed of the truck through the side, because unless you're 6'4", and there's no like step in the back when you put the tailgate down to get in. So it lacks some pretty common features now that we've kind of find across the board, but overall, pretty decent.
Yeah, and with that note, I do want to announce that if you go to bondspeedstainlessssteelladders.com, we have one designed specifically for the Cybertruck.
Sweet. Well,
we also sell a...
you should powder coat it or wrap it.
...cleaner that comes in an aerosol.
So speaking of wrapping Cybertrucks, so I had this little vision the other day, which I'm not going to pursue, but I thought, how cool would it be? So you know where the Cybertruck would really look cool? Is if you go back to the Blade Runner days and you look at like some of the graphics. I was going to bug our buddy Dave Merritt and go, Dave, let's collaborate on a wrap or a patina that you'd put on a Cybertruck to make it fit right into the Blade Runner world, right? Like the Blade Runner environment. Then you would go, okay, I get it now, right? Like, could you imagine it with those types of graphics and that look? The Cybertruck would be perfect.
And I want to like it, but I don't. I saw one parked in a parking lot yesterday, and it was backed into the parking space, and it just looks so awkward.
It does, unless you do something outrageous with it.
You know what you need? You need to wrap it to look like a wood plane.
Yeah.
No, wrap it.
Well, I saw the black one wrapped because it left the Tesla facility over near me. Uh-huh. And as soon as it pulled out to be sort of this matte black looking, and of course the way the Cybertruck looks, it just looked like a prop car from a film. Like,
yeah,
I just
exactly.
Expecting
so
something
make it
like,
into a prop
yeah.
car.
But I listen,
Blade Runner that shit.
This is just my opinion.
They had low budgets, so they just made those plywood cars and stuff. And it was,
you know, Alistair drove one, spent a week with one, and he likes it.
People are liking them.
Nice interior, but
hey, we're talking about it, so mission accomplished. People, safety people are very curious on how it got released, yeah, though, exactly. Because it will kill you if you're on the facing edge, the leading edge of that hood. It will kill you. I mean, you're on a motorcycle, you're in a little roadster or something, or you're a pedestrian, and that thing hits you, it will kill you.
Well, yes, but also keep in mind that it's lighter than the F-150 Lightning and the Rivian.
Yeah, but it's no plastic. It's all stainless, man, and the thickness of that stainless, it doesn't give like to a pedestrian. That's what they're talking about, and the angle of the hood, like where it hits you. There's a bunch of stuff out on it. I'm curious how valid it is, because
be fair, I don't want to get hit by any.
No, exactly, and it has all the
same really? Features
where hopefully it wouldn't hit anything. It would stop, but God forbid any of that fails.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Or maybe you just hit it. Let's just try running at it when it's parked and asleep, and we'll just run at it.
Yeah, run at it.
Run say, ow, it does hurt.
So last week was the Detroit Autorama, and the Detroit Autorama is known for having the Riddler Award, where, you know, if you follow that at all, you hear about the Grade 8, which out of all the cars that enter, they choose 8. Then they break it down from there, and there's one winner. And
big deal.
The winner this year was.
Oh, go ahead, Brad.
Go ahead for you, Brad.
We all know. Dave Kindig. We all know. Go ahead.
And okay, the very first thing was he had a 53 Corvette there. And the very first thing about that car is, well, it wasn't really a Corvette because. It wasn't fiberglass. That 53 Corvette was completely made from aluminum.
Insane.
And now we have a little bit of a discrepancy here. I thought the car was beautiful. I enjoyed the roof line, the back, you know, a lot of the detail on it. The wheels to me are spectacular. I got a little peek at how they did the wheels. You guys may not know this, but the wheels are center lock. So they have a true knockoff that you can take. But what's extremely unique about those wheels, they are truly one-off in that there is no fastening visible to the center, to the outer hoop. And that is because the fasteners are from the outs or from the rim into the wheel. They don't come in from the back, they don't come in from the front, they come in from the bead. And it's really amazing how they did that to get that to work. And there's just a ton of engineering in the wheels, ton of work in the wheels, not to mention the hundreds of other machined parts, the 3D printed interior, the V12 motor that is basically a 12-cylinder LS, and the block was cast in Australia for that car. I can't imagine how much they spent on building this car. And before you guys put in your thoughts and like that, back in my Boyd days, when Boyd and I are partners, we won the Riddler.
Yeah.
And do you guys know what's interesting about the Riddler? I really enjoy the Riddler Award for a couple of reasons. One is
Batman's nemesis.
Yes, that is exactly. I gosh, you took it from
me. I wasn't going to say it.
Come on.
You have to debut the vehicle there to be in contention, meaning you can't put anything on social media. See, back in the Boyd days, we didn't have to worry about that. It was just don't let any magazines come by and do any sneak peeks or anything like that. But you can't put it on social media. You can't put a, hey, we're building this shots or anything like that. It has to be entirely debuted there. But to make it even better, the vehicle has to run and be driven from your trailer to its space in the show. So we're not going to have any trailer queens where For those of you that have never been around ISCA, International Show Car people, there are guys that have chrome-plated rotors on their brakes.
I was just going to ask you about that. Yeah,
yes.
Go ahead.
And they do not put brake shoes on the cars because they just push them over there because they don't want somebody to hit the brake and have them clamp down on their chrome-plated rotors. So they are not runners, and they don't want to start the car because their chrome-plated or nickel-plated exhaust will blow. And that is the difference with this show. They have to start them and run them.
Wow.
Well, Kindig's car, for example, does have chrome rotors.
Yes.
It appears, yeah.
Or some kind of polish or something on it. And I was going to ask you about that. I was like, are we going a little too far? It presents well. I get it.
Been for a long time on the show car circuit. And you know, some guys will swap them out once they get them in place.
I guess that's what you do, right? Like, they just have them on there to win the award, to show the car. But aside from that, you...
Oh, yeah, it's totally show. It's like the tires that you will see guys there, Matt. And I mean, this drives me nuts. I'm not a show car guy.
Because
I don't even like sitting at a fairgrounds for like 3 days. I'd rather be out driving my car, or at least driving around the fairgrounds. But like, they will get there with their tires wrapped in blue tape, you just to roll them across the floor. Then they get them, they pull all the blue tape off. Then I've seen guys sit there for hours with a razor blade cutting off all the little nipples on the tires, you know,
yeah,
at the exact length so that they don't show. And it's, I mean, it's just crazy.
I've seen in the past, I don't know. Maybe people are getting a slick or getting some other sort of tire, or they just try to special order something without a tread.
Oh, yeah.
They carve their own tread in.
Well, I've done that. I did that.
Yeah.
When I built Sunfire for wide body.
You just use like a router? You just make like a pattern
Have what's called a...
it's like a hot knife.
Stock car guys use them. I got a set of BF Goodrich... Formula One tires. They sent them to me, shipped them to me from France, and they're like super sticky rubber. And you get this little thing that's a nibbler, but it heats up, and it's like a heat. And you draw the tread on, and then you sit there and you go, and it just carves it out. And then what I did is I took some sandpaper and sanded it all the same, you know, so that it looked great. And then I took the car to SEMA, and then I drove on them. And it's like they were like $1,500 a piece. I mean, it was crazy.
Before you had to do all the custom work to them. Anyway, I don't know. It's such an art piece at this point. It just happens to be a vehicle that you're building, but it's an art piece that, you know, like the owner of this car, the undercarriage is so gorgeous and so finished. Even if you like PPF the entire undercarriage of the car, you would just be nervous about anything.
Well, it looks like there's leather on the underside of the car. if you look in between the exhaust pipes, that looks like leather.
Well, here's what happened. That car will go for a year on the show car circuit, just like the one that they built at Cal Auto, that beautiful car that Buick that they built. It'll go for a year. Then this year it'll go out and they'll see it driving around it, you know, depending on the owner. But like, we had an owner, we built a car that he won the Grand National Roadster Show with. And the second he won that trophy, he drove it. And then it came back about 6 months later. He wanted the car blown apart. He took it on AmeriCruise. He took it on everything. Then he had us blow it apart, sand it down, repaint, replate, put it all back together, and then he put it in his collection. Which Bruce Meyer's notable for that too, like that boat that he has.
These days with PPF, you could take this car and you could PPF the entire car. You could go real thick or double layer on the undercarriage, and when you're done, you know, like you said, like show circuit it, drive it, do a power tour, and then after the year, you know, take all the PPF off and, you know, put it on your spinning plate in your garage on your display, and do that. At least you wouldn't have to really blow everything apart. There might be a few things you would want to fix, but you wouldn't have to go, all right, I need to put another $200,000 into the car because I drove $200,000 of value off the car.
Don't mention that around the builders, because how do you think they're going to continue to make money off that same car? You got to blow it apart. Matt, what was your feeling on the car? You weren't a big fan of that body style.
Strange thing. It's not my favorite jumping off point for a car. Like this style of Corvette and the look of it. There's just, Aaron was saying it earlier before we even started, is some jumping off points, some cars don't respond well to modernization. And I feel like this type of car, when you put the really big wheels and basically the rubber band tires, it doesn't do much for me personally. But I wouldn't have started with this year sort of Corvette, this influence. Like I get it, it's all bespoke. There's probably nothing on this car that has anything to do with a production car. I like Dave Kindig. He's a talented guy. There's an incredible shop. He's always great to talk to, and he's very, very sweet. And he did so much good work on this car. It just wouldn't have been the car I started with.
Here's the great thing about hot rods. They're hot rods. They're not going to appeal to everyone. And there's a car that was in the Great Eight. Did you guys happen to pull up the Great Eight contenders?
I flipped through a gallery a while ago.
There was a gray Chrysler that had a tremendous amount of work, a tremendous amount of craftsmanship. And to me, not my choice. It's just not my body style. But somebody, it was their dream car. And that's, and that's what it's all about. There's people that like Mustangs,
that's true. There are some people.
Don't say Mini, because everybody loves a Mini.
Now, Aaron, you had mentioned right before we went on that you said you weren't that impressed with the Kindig Corvette because you said you could build something like that in your garage in an afternoon. Now, go ahead and explain that.
Yeah, I have to say, I like Matt and I mentioned, it's tough. We love Dave. They're incredible craftsmen. But like you said, it's everything's not for everyone. I sent you guys a photo, right? It looks like it's leather. It looks
leather
like it's leather underneath.
Yeah. Actually, scrolling through the Great Eight, the quality of these cars, the amount of work is so amazing. There's more cars on that list that I would have never started with.
Exactly.
And I get it though. Like you don't want to be the guy that shows up with another high boy or another Tudor or another 69 Camaro. You want to do something different. Or a Mustang.
Camaro, like you said, But
look at that.
I don't know. Do they all have to be American cars all the time? No one's jumping off with an XKE
a few years back that was like an MG or something like that. But you've got to remember you're in Detroit, Matt. And the judges are going to be the judges, and you want to make sure that you're, appealing.
They can't be judging based off of the cars they start with, because these aren't necessarily the cars we would start with. They're definitely judging.
Cool too.
Okay, but now remember this. That car was started over 5 years ago. That's the other thing. Someday we're probably going to see all these customized, GT500 Mustangs and late model Chryslers and stuff like that at some point. We can't, because the government will no longer allow us to customize them or have them, so they'll take
it. When are we going to see a Great Eight contender electric car? I'm not saying they're doing a Tesla, I'm saying the drivetrain, right? Because we've seen a few of those at SEMA, haven't really caught on with the audience, but and we're seeing a lot of swaps of Porsches and Humvees and whatever.
Someone's going to do it.
Someone's going to do an electric version, right?
Nobody will. It'll be a while though, because if you're going to put that kind of money into something to try and win the Riddler, you got to wait. You got to read the room, and the room's not there yet.
Yeah, yeah. And it's tough to really kind of to do the personal, the show quality personalization. You know, like you flip any of these cars upside down, and you see how much work underneath is done. And if you just had like a big battery tray that you smoothed out and you powder coated, and like this is a huge, you know, candy apple red battery tray, not a lot of custom work under there, you know, not a lot of special stuff in there. Not to mention, these cars, they hide everything you don't want to see, right? Every wire, every, you know, everything that's like is dated. Like, how do you, when you have those massive orange, you know, wire harnesses and the plugs and everything, like all you're doing is just making panels to hide all of that crap as much as
you can. Or you just showcase it all.
And what a lot of people that haven't ever been around these cars don't understand is that the judging is so meticulous. They will get mirrors like a dentist uses, and they will stick them up, you know, between the transmission and the, and this is going from experience. I watched a judge once stick one up between the transmission and the transmission tunnel to see that the paint was color sanded and rubbed, you know, up where you don't see it, and that the bolts were chrome plated, and that the, you know, everything, they go places that you don't even think about, you know. It's like
you got to hide little Easter eggs and notes for the judges in there.
Yeah. Hi, Bob.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Yeah, right.
You put in there. Bob Millard was here. But no, yeah.
Anyway, congratulations to the Kindig team.
The car's awesome, and his customer Pennsylvania spent a boatload. I can't wait to see the car in person. I want to hear it. I want to hear that V12.
And yeah, a V12 LS. That's got to be pretty trippy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's an LLS now. I don't know. or it's an LS. Okay. You guys, we all watched that promo video from Dodge. And it was sent by one of our listeners. Thank you very much. And I don't have my phone in front of me right now, so I apologize. The listener who sent it to us, but he said, hey, here's a link to this promo video. I don't know if you guys saw it, but I sure would like to hear what the three of you think. And,
I clicked on the YouTube video, something like, as we're recording this, about 690,000 views, like 6,500 comments, 6,700 comments. And as I was scrolling through the comments, I feel bad for the Dodge guys. I don't think I saw a single positive comment. And I scrolled, I was just kind of scrolling through, probably got through, you know, just skimmed through the first, you know, 150 comments. Interesting, kind of interesting video. Now, this is separate from what do we think about the car they debuted.
Right, this is just the video.
We're just talking about the promo video.
My initial thought was, when is this thing going to end? It just kept going, and it was more like a drone. It wasn't that excitement, like, oh, what's going to happen next? And it was almost like the story was just too windy, windy, and I gotta say this: the CEO of marketing that was in the video,
Tim Kaniskis. Yeah, he's the CEO.
Yeah, Tim shouldn't have been in there. They need to know when to hire somebody and not put an executive in. He should have maybe been in for just like the wind up or something like that, but did not work. And I got bored, but I also got kind of like, okay. Well, the facts didn't come through, and I think everybody kind of thought that same thing.
To spend that much money and come off cheap.
I was talking to Goldberg on CarCast earlier in the week because, you know, he's a Dodge guy.
Yeah, why would you ask him? He's not even into cars.
And he owns a bunch of those, and he's been in the commercials and stuff.
Yeah.
So he's he has a love for the brand, but also he's not a guy that holds back on anything and any of his opinions. So he's not really doing it to make Dodge love him. So we got an honest opinion from him. And going into this, going into the whole EV thing was he kind of felt like Dodge was turning their back on the enthusiasts that help build that brand, right? On, and I'm saying Dodge makes a bunch of different vehicles, especially over the years, but what they've done with the Charger and the Challenger and the SRTs and the Crate engines, and just, you know, how the big horsepower and the brotherhood of muscle was sort of the theme. He just felt like it was going to be tough to win the loyalty of those enthusiasts. And watching this video, it seemed like it's a 10-minute video, and 70% of that video was them trying to convince those enthusiasts.
Yeah, totally.
It was a little weird. It was like, no, this is cool. You're going to like it. But yeah, if you don't like it, we didn't have a choice. We were forced into this.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's like the whole thing was kind of like an excuse. You know, it wasn't
very much so.
It started off as, this is a love letter to the legacy of Dodge for the first like couple of minutes. And then it was 7 minutes of,
Sorry,
lot of apologizing for where we are. And they were like, it's not our fault. We don't want to be here either. We're just getting forced into this. And then the last swing at the whole thing was, by the way, if you still hate us after 8.5 minutes of this video, we do have a gas engine version of the car coming out.
Exactly.
You can get that six pack, buddy. You know, it's still there.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It's
now,
so true.
I don't know. That being said, the cars are not ugly. The cars are interesting. The performance is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
I like that Dodge is going, the whole point of EV was like efficiency and being green and whatever. And they said, we got to do an EV because we have to do an EV, but we're going to put 305 tires in the front and 325 in the back, and range be damned. We want it to handle well and be a performance car. And we're just going to throw a massive battery into it. And just like they did with their engines, you know, their gas engines. And can we turn out something cool?
But if you don't like that, we have a six-cylinder turbo.
Why didn't they just throw the Charger name out the window and all of that and just call it, that one right there is assault and that one's battery. So, yeah. I mean, you know, then they could have just gone right for it.
Yeah. So, and to break it down a little bit, it gets confusing. So, Dodge Challenger.
Yes, it does.
The Dodge Challenger, that name is being shelved. So, there's Dodge Charger. And under the Charger brand, there's going to be two lines, Daytona, which is electric, and Scat Pack, which is, I'm sorry, Six Pack,
yeah,
which is gas engine. So there's Daytona and Six Pack, and they're all going to be all wheel drive, and they're both going to be available in both two door and four door. And then under those, there's going to be the RTs and the Scat Pack, RTs being the base models and the Scat Packs being the high performance models. Now, on the gas engine side, you're going to get two gas engine variations based on the six-cylinder Hurricane inline six engine. And I believe they're going to just be all-wheel drive and automatic transmission and no manual.
Mm.
Now, the electric side, you're going to get an RT and a Scat Pack. So you're going to get two horsepower variations, but it gets confusing. Because each of those cars has the base horsepower, and then there's a button on the steering wheel that gives you an extra 40 horsepower on the RT and an extra 80 horsepower on the Scat Pack. However, there's also the Direct Connection, which is their aftermarket catalog.
Oh my gosh.
And the Direct Connection, the initial cars, the launch edition cars, if you want to call them that, will come with the Stage 1 Direct Connection upgrade, which now takes the highest horsepower version to 670 horsepower. So it's so the initial cars will come with the base horsepower plus.
This show also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. you can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.